Behind the News on Radio Ghana and as usual, we encourage you to be very active listeners. You can send your comments to 026-441-8767, 026-441-8767. The mention of the single fine salary structure brings hope to many public sector workers. For some public sector workers, however, it has been a series of disappointments because they've not been able to be rolled on to this fine structure. What is the problem with this group? PROSAG, that is the Association of Local Government and other workers in that area, are raising concerns that they've been disappointed so far, and some workers in the northern region have embarked on a sit-down strike to press home their demand so that they will be rolled onto the scheme. We have joining us at the moment Ali Anafo, Northern Regional Secretary of PROSAG, to tell us much more about the strike and whether they should have resorted to the National Union before taking such action. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening, sir.
Yes, the concerns have been raised that as a regional unit, you should have asked from the national body before embarking on strike. Is that what we understand, or perhaps you think you have the mandate to do undertake the action you are taking presently?
Yes, we have the mandate to undertake the action we have taken because the workers are the grassroots. You know, the leadership or association, before they take any action, is the rank and file that will give them the mandate to do that. And for that matter, we realize that the Fair Wages and Salary Commission has been toiling with the leadership or association on this matter. And for that matter, the workers, the rank and file at the grassroots, are taking it upon themselves to fight for their rights because their patience have been run out for far too long. Because the Fair Wages and Salary Commission has been deceiving them day in, day out by giving them promise that the single salary structure was a salary that was coming to enhance their pay. But that we have realized that from day one, they keep on promising then this month, it will be June, it will be May, it will be July, and July came and passed. Now August, we are in August, and we have realized that August is not going to be possible. And that is why we have resorted to a sit-down strike to press home our demand for government and that matter, the Fair Wages and Salary Commission, to ask, put their act together and to sit down and negotiate with our leadership so that our members will be migrated on the single spine.
But have you checked from your leadership whether perhaps there are some challenges that they have not been able to meet? Why you have not been rolled on?
Yes, even as I say, The Commission has agreed and even admitted that there have been challenges in the migration of contract members onto the single spine. There are so many distortions that need to be corrected. And these distortions, we had a roadmap that was drawn between our leadership and families. And this roadmap, every time there is a meeting, we make progress, the next meeting, families will draw us back. And it looks as if they are playing a delay tactic on us. We have realized that as employees of government and workers that implement government policies, we need to be rolled on immediately.
Yes, but I'm still asking that question. You've spoken about the fact that there were challenges, really, you acknowledge that fact. But have you found out where exactly that challenge is and whether perhaps your leadership at the national level are still taking it up or have just left it there? Hello, Mr. Anafo. We seem to be losing you. If you can reposition yourself and then come back on that issue again.
Are you okay?
Yes, it's better. Oh, that's unfortunate. We lost Mr. Ali Anafu, Northern Regional Secretary of Closed Agro. We'll try to reestablish contact with him. Behind the news on Radio Ghana, we are still trying to reestablish contact with Ali Anafu, Northern Regional Secretary of Closed Agro. But we have the Greater Accra Regional Secretary of Closed Agro now joining us on the line to look at the action their counterparts are taking in the Northern region and ask whether perhaps they are also reflecting on it or still pushing for when they will be rolled on. This is Samuel Newcloth, you call us in. You are welcome to Behind the News.
Yeah, thank you. Please hold on, my line is not back there.
Yes, okay. As you hold on, we can tell you that you are listening to us live on Sunrise FM at Kufuria.
Yeah.
Yes, Mr. Collison. Yes.
Yeah.
You know about the action that your counterparts are taking in the Northern region at the moment. For the Greater Accra, you are closer to where Fairway Jesus. What are you saying?
Yes, they have gotten to that level and they have our full support. You know, this is Greater Accra. It's a region on its own. Simply means that it is not the national office which is pushing any region into prison, but we have resolved. He said earlier, you asked him a question whether I have the consent of the national offices. We need not. It's stressed on him, but this is the rank and file, and we are to push the national offices. The national offices are there always in a sitting with the fair wages and salaries commission, and their lukewarm attitude, I should say, ineffectiveness, and then the inadequacies within the Fair Wages and Salaries Commission. And it is unfortunate government has still not realized that this commission is doing more harm than good.
As you raise these concerns, the natural issues, what have you got from your national executives? What are they telling you directly?
What we hear from our national officers, anytime a decision is taken on at a meeting, well understood, signed by both parties, that is the Fair Wages and Salaries Commission, and then our party, that is the Civil and Local Government Staff Association Ghana, Prospect. Fair Wages and Salaries Commission remain on agreed positions, and as if it is an intention, as if they have the power somewhere telling them to behave that way. And now the rank and file, especially Greater Accra, I am speaking for Greater Accra. As Northern Region has taken up a strike action, we are in red bands. And we are going to move at the appropriate time. So we have also given a deadline that come by the end of August, should we not be migrated onto the single spine salary structure, we will decide on a different action.
Yeah. Mr. Collison, as you raise these concerns, some will still be asking, have you gone through the appropriate channel?
Appropriate channel in what?
Yes. Informing your national union, going to Fair Wages, having a paper on it, perhaps even alerting the Labour Commission and all on some of the concerns you are now expressing.
Let me tell you, our national officers have accepted all those avenues. We started that in first line, and first it appeared civil servants did not want to be migrated onto the single spine salary structure. It wasn't that, but they were not then prepared to sit down with us because we raised some issues and they were not prepared to sit down with us. It was through government intervention and then national security even came in before they started sitting down with us. So that gave have the reason for a job re-evaluation to be done for CLOCSAG members. So since then, all those avenues have been exhausted. And now we've gotten to a point that should the Fair Wages and Salaries and be fair to us, as the name itself depicts, we should have been migrated onto the salary single spine salary structure now.
Yeah. Sometimes when we raise some of these concerns, we look at those who were rolled on earlier and had a few challenges. We can cite the case of the teachers. Do you think all these things are being ironed out? That is why perhaps you are facing the challenge in being rolled on?
We noticed that earlier. That was why we kicked it earlier. That was last year. So for us, should the Fair Wages and Salaries Commission really want to migrate us onto the single spine? there would be no such challenges. Everything has been ironed out. So it is intentional on the part of the Fair Wages and Salaries Committee. We don't know whether there is a power behind which is giving them that attitude or that authority to do so.
Okay. I want to thank you very much, Mr. Kolasi Kolisin, for your time. But we want to put it on record that we've been trying to reach the national executives, but we've not been very successful at that. We are still trying. When we manage to get them, we'll get that position, because Fair Wages tells us that they deal directly with the national executives of CLOSAC and will make their position on the matter public at the appropriate time. But thank you so much, Mr. Samuel Kolasi Kolisin.
Hello, please. Am I still online?
Mr. Kolisin.
Yes.
We are thanking you. If you have a quick point.
Yeah, please. I want to make it clear to the Fair Wages and Salaries Commission that come by the end of August, if we are not migrated onto the single spine salary structure, our measures will be tougher than that of Northern Region, and perhaps we will move across the whole length of Ghana as clock size. Thank you.
The hope is that it may not get to that, but thank you very much. But Mr. Ali Anafu, you have joined us on the line again. We hear earlier today, some of your members showed a lukewarm attitude towards the call for a strike. Does that mean you are not succeeding in your efforts?
Oh, as my colleague earlier has just mentioned to you, we are succeeding. We are on the ground. You know, we are a human institution. You understand? Whereby we have given directives that nobody should work. You know, so it is only, it's like the reporter went to assembly and saw some few ladies there who were sitting behind computer, and then he interviewed them and they said they were not working, but they said actually they were working. But I want to tell you that we are firmly on the ground. If you go to, if you contact our people in Walwali, Sola, Tuna, Calabar, Karaga District, and all around, they are not working. And Tamale, most of the department, people are not working. You may see them letter about it, but they are not working, please. So for that matter, we are actually not, we are succeeding. We are succeeding. We are telling the Fair Wages and Salaries Commission that they must put their acts together.
Okay. But have you received any directive from the national executives?
We are not, as I was saying, we are not talking, executives are not part of this issue, because we have already told them that we issued a press conference on the 5th of July, telling them that if they fail to negotiate with the Fair Wages and Salaries Commission, and for us to migrate us by the end of July, as even promised by the Chief Director of Fair Wages, Mr. Graham, we will advise ourselves. And on the 4th of August, we realized that at the end of July, nothing has happened. So we have decided to take it upon ourselves, because the rank and file in the Northern Region are always on our necks, asking us questions. When, look, I think the leadership are not serious. And we want to tell you that we are not being pushed by anybody. We are taking the decision on our own. And it is we, the people at the grassroots, who suffer most.
Well,
hello,
yes, Mr. Ali Anafu, we'll be monitoring developments there and appropriately the reporting when need be. But we want to thank you very much for your time.
Yes, so I want a quick one. Hello,
yes,
here's a quick one. I'm saying that I will speak to you, I'm in Accra. As I get back to Tamale, we are going to move from department to department to make sure that the strike is being enforced.
Ali Anafu is Northern Regional Secretary of CLOSA. Local Government Staff Association of Ghana, Richness in Accra presently, but they are based in the Northern Region. Behind the news on Radio Ghana, and as we move on, very soon we'll be taking a look at responsible media. How are we succeeding 10 years after the repeal of the criminal libel law? And also, are we having money laundering in Ghana? There is a concern from the Dankwa Institute. What are these concerns? But before then, we take a quick story from Barbara.
Thank you. An 8.39% inflation rate has been recorded for the month of July, representing a 0.20% decline compared to the 8.59% recorded in June. Figures released by the Ghana Statistical Service indicate that the rate recorded is the lowest since June 1992, where a rate of 8.37% was recorded. Announcing the figures, the government statistician Dr. Grace Bidiaku noted that inflation, which has been falling for 18 consecutive months from a peak of 20.74% in July 2009, is mainly being driven by the non-food sector. Touching on the increase in public sector pay by 20% and its impact on inflation, Dr. Bidiaku said the effect will not be significant as increase in income does not necessarily affect consumer purchasing power.
The higher news on Radio Ghana Baba will come to you in a GC4, a continuation of the other story. Freedom of speech and the promotion of pluralistic and vibrant media remain key factors for the development of democracy. Since 1992, constitutional provisions have been made and conducive atmosphere have been created to ensure freedom and independence of the Ghanaian media. In spite of the reputation Ghana has gained for promoting media freedom, critics say there are challenges which have to be addressed to make the media more responsible. There are numerous calls to streamline the journalism profession. Among the suggestions made are the legal empowerment of the National Media Commission and the establishment of the Media Development Fund to curtail the excesses in the journalism profession. Yet, there are others who think dealing with the excesses that have characterized the journalism profession goes beyond the mentioned suggestions. Behind the News discusses these issues with media practitioners, and we have first on the line lawyer Osei Kojuadu, a lecturer of media law at the Ghana Institute of Journalism, to dig deeper into the issues. Lawyer Osei Kojuadu, you are welcome to the program.
Thank you, my brother.
Naturally, almost every journalist or media person is happy about the repeal of the criminal libel law and see it as a step in the right direction. You have been looking at the media over a period. Do you think people are living up to the responsibility attached to the repeal of the law?
Very well. What is the criminal libel law? The criminal libel law simply states that speech can be criminalized if it is made against a public official and it is not true. Which means that when such a statement is made, the one who made the prosecution, who made the statement, will be prosecuted. Now, if the prosecution is successful, then that person will pay a fine or go to prison for a term or both. This is basically what criminal libel is about. So now, the reason for which this law was repealed was that if it stays on the statute book, it will gut journalists, and it will make it difficult for journalists to probe government officials, particularly when issues of corruption are raised. So it was meant to free the journalist to be able to do his work, and then do it well, to the extent that the whole society will benefit, and also within the context of democracy. Now, the question is, we have been told that it is 10 years that the law has been repealed. But the question is, for these 10 years, do an assessment and then ask yourself whether there have been any responsibilities attached to speech at all. In the sense that when people are talking, they talk with a sense of responsibility. Do an assessment and ask yourself, is it good? Is the situation good or bad? The situation, honestly, my brother, is bad. So minus the criminal libel law, what is left? What is left is the civil libel law. And civil libel simply means that if somebody says anything against you, which you feel has damaged your reputation and has lowered you in the eyes of right-thinking members of society, you go to court. And then when you go to court and you are successful, damage it.
Yeah. So you think
activity one minute I'm coming.
Yes.
The question is, how many people have been able to go to court? You see, normally what we do is we test the law in the court. You go to court, the court makes pronouncements, and the pronouncements become law, and this is what is going to bind all of us. But the question, once again, my brother, is how many people have been able to go to court?
So you believe that the extra controls are not working very well in making sure?
It's working, my brother. Nothing is working. People are also not going to court. The point is, people must go to court and test the law.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, the Constitution also made a mistake by not giving the National Media Commission the teeth to bite. The Media Commission, as it is now, is toothless. Hey, when decisions are made by the Commission, some journalists will decide to comply or not to comply with it. The Ghana Journalists Association, too, at times when these matters are raised, you see them solidarizing with their brothers. You see, you don't see any sanction. You don't see anybody telling the brother that, my brother, what you are doing is not good.
Yeah, but hello, lawyer, how are you?
My brother,
please let me come in here. We've heard the Media Commission sometimes come in to try to arrange for people who have been offended to get to them so that they try to straighten out issues. The Ghana Journalists Association, as you've mentioned, is not a body that can sometimes have sanctions. They will say they will name and shame. We'll later be having a rep in the course of this program and all. So for all these, don't you think sometimes the responsibility comes back to practitioners?
To
practitioners to do what is right.
And yes, and that is where now the whole society is now relying on the ethical positions that the journalists will take. So now, if you see a journalist who lacks ethics, he will do what we are seeing now. And the question is, how many of them have the ethics? How many? In the sense that, consider what I'm going to say, or what I'm opening my lines for somebody to say, what I'm giving my platforms for somebody to say, is not good. And therefore, I won't allow it. You see, and the politicians have taken over. They have polarized the country to the extent that now they have employed the media men to do their dirty work for them. And nobody can go to court. The National Media Commission can't bite. The Ghana Journalist Association can also not bite.
So,
and the profession is so free that anybody at all can wake up and take a pen and paper and enter. Go and sit behind any console. Go and sit behind anything and begin to talk, whether rubbish or not.
Hello, Lawyer Sekwedu, please let me come in here. You've raised concerns about the National Media Commission supposed to look at content. In that case, what do you suggest should be done to make it more powerful and not trying to push media people to do its bidding, but to ensure that they practice in the main line?
Well, you see, the National Media Commission has been provided for in the Constitution. We should go back to the Constitution and get the Constitution to give the National Media Commission some teeth to bite. It can raise the National Media Commission to the status of the High Court and give it powers to sanction. And then the chairman of the commission, possibly, would be a retired judge, a retired High Court, Court of Appeal, or Supreme Court judge, surrounded by the other commissioners. And so they'll take into consideration a whole lot before passing judgment. And then saying that, my brother, what you have done is also you have been sanctioned. Without that, the National Media Commission cannot do anything. It has come out with guidelines for political reporting and so on and so forth. But you see, it is not yielding anything.
Please let me come in. In that case, will some observers not say that now the media is lacking the type of freedom we claim we have presently?
The other problem too is that the maturity, we need some kind of maturity too. Our politicians are not mature, and it looks as if they have transferred that kind of immaturity into the field of journalism. And at a point, you see, you realize that's why we have media law and ethics. Fine, the law is there. But the ethical aspects of the profession too is very important. And normally, if the practitioners are mature enough, That is where the ethics come to the fore.
Okay.
They are able to use the ethics to take decisions on how to report and how not to report.
Lawyer Sefadu, please hold on. We'll come back to you because you are in a training institution so that we see how we give people that capacity to ensure that they mature and know what to go on and what not to go on. But Dr. Nialabi is a media consultant and has spoken on a lot of platforms about the issue of responsibility. Dr. Nialabi, you are welcome once again to Behind the News.
Thank you very much.
We want to pick your general assessment before we start digging into individual issues of the 10 years of activity after the return of the criminal idol law.
Well, generally speaking, I think that the repeal of the criminal libel law has rather broadened the frontiers of free expression, in a generic manner. And I think that that is what every policy that seeks to develop, that has development as its core agenda, should be aspiring to. Because if there is unfettered access to, free expression, people are very free to come and expose wrongdoing, which will be something inimical to society's development. And we know that the fight against corruption, for example, is something that can never, ever be won if the media or if agents of free expression and so on are affected or are chained. So that is my take on this. And for me, I think it is a moment for celebration of this very momentous and very bold decision that was taken by the NPP government.
As we highlight all the successes chalked up over the years, even people talking about freedoms are now expressing concern that it appears the repeal has given others the license to go contrary to laid down principles in terms of practice. What is your view about that?
They are perfectly right. Those who in our parliament decided to deliberate on this sensitive nature did it mindful of the fact that there were certain pitfalls, there were certain dangers that were certainly going to underpin the process of opening up, that is, the broadening of the frontiers of free expression. For example, if I go back on memory lane, I remember repeatedly Dr. Obedo Samoa, a very, very key and important and respectable politician of our time, saying that repeal would take place over his dead body. To which what he wanted to say was that he would never be party to this kind of process of trying to unchain Kotela.
Hello, Dr. Alabi. It's unfortunate we lost Dr. Alabi, but we'll try to re-establish contact with him. But we still have you on the line, Lawyer Ose Podu. Dr. Alabi was developing some important points, that is, unfettered access. And that's certainly, many people will say, is good for our development. But the dangers. Now let's look at the social aspects of it. Are we evaluating or weighing the consequences of some actions that is not so much in the mainstream? Do you think it's being assessed very well before people come out with things that we do not like?
You see, my brother, there's a big difference between theory and practice. In theory, it is good to open up the frontiers of freedom and then include free speech. It is good to do that in theory, but when we come to the practice of it, so you realize that even in the mature democracy, they put limitations on freedom of speech. There is some kind of responsibility attached to freedom of speech, and if you go against that responsibility, you are sanctioned. Even in the mature democracy, it is now, it looks as if you want to be more Catholic than the Pope. We want to open the frontiers to the extent that we are going to reap something we don't like. As it is now, ask yourself whether the climate in Ghana now, as far as freedom of speech is concerned, is conducive. The climate is so polluted, you see, and there's so much tension. But democracy is not meant to produce such kind of tension. The contradiction inherent in the theory and practical aspect of free speech is what we should look at. You see, because you ask yourself, why is it that in the mature democracy, for instance, like the UK, they have some laws there like that, like the criminal libel law. Even, you see, and the point is, the use of that law in a democracy, if you don't use it properly, that is where you see civil society coming up against you.
Okay, so it should be there and used properly. That is what you are saying.
And then number two, you see, that the National Media Commission is a body that can do the work of bringing journalists to become responsible. You see, getting journalists to become responsible and to hold them accountable for what they manufacture and sell to us. But as it is, the Media Commission itself it does not have the teeth to bite. It does not have the power to sanction journalists. It's only appeal to them that what you have done is wrong. Therefore, do A, B, C, D.
Okay, so
in a rejoinder and then publish it.
Okay. Laya, before we let you go, you are from a training institution. Do you think they have been given that capacity to be able to discern between right and wrong, sometimes without anyone coming in immediately to tell you that this is what you should do?
You see, the problem now, let me come to myself. The little problem I have with the teaching of media law in our institution is that it is given only one semester. Just one semester to deal with media law. You see, and you realize that you are unable to deal with it properly. You see, but if it is spread over a period of, say, two semesters, so you do one, perhaps, if it's a diploma, a two-year diploma, you do part in the first year, and then you do part in the second year. If it's a four-year degree program, it is spread within, and you take the students through it gradually. And as and when issues crop up in society, you point it out to them and then tell them that this is what the law likes.
Okay.
This is what the law does not like.
Okay.
It's one of us.
Yeah.
But as it is done over a period of time.
So you believe that there should be more time. Lawyer Selkadu, and for this program, to you know, we are also bound by time. So we want to thank you very much on this occasion for sharing your concerns with us.
Thank you very much.
Lawyer Selkadu is a lecturer of media law at the Ghana Institute of Journalism. But we still have on the line now, getting back, Dr. Nii Alabi. Doctor, you were developing a point when the line truncated.
Yes.
If you can go back to that point.
Absolutely. What I was saying is the fact that those who debated the issue in Parliament were not mindful of the fact that said gangs existed, but they thought they would have to give a primacy to the human endeavor to be able to live above certain petty feelings. For example, and I have always used this French philosopher's approach, that René Descartes, that was the name of this 17th century French philosopher, who says that we are all born with a certain amount of common sense. And because of that common sense God has given us, we are able to discern evil from good. And that is where the morality and the ethics of a profession comes in. And the lecturer in sociology was referring to ethics and law. It is true. Law is law. But law is legal, it's juridical, but the ethics of a profession emanates from a person's level of maturity, a person's refinement as a human being. If I am writing an article about you, for example, there should be a kind of voice telling me, hey, is it fair? Is it balanced? Has I crossed my facts about this person? These are recurrent voices that should be asked, and that is where the ethics of the profession comes in. Those who think that they can just pick up the pen and start writing unprintable things about others, they are people who stray into the profession. And I have always said it, that in Ghana, there are data journalists, those who belong to the fringes of this profession. the lunatic fringes who think that they are to be doing the bidding of some politicians. And this is where the muddying of the political waters comes in.
Yeah.
We can't run away from it, but with maturity, with a level of enlightenment, and with a very deep, deep commitment to teaching the ethics and making people stick to it, looking for fair sanctions against erring journalists, I think we will get there.
Yeah.
I've always said that.
Yes.
It has happened in other democracies. I don't see why it will not happen again.
Yes. Doc,
you those who think that they can kick decency in the teeth and masquerade as journalists.
Yes. Dr. Nialabi, just a moment. Please let me come in here. We've looked at that issue that we can get there, and there is an underlining suggestion that the National Media Commission should be able to bite, there should be controls and all. But yet we are also talking about free speech, so it pushes us into a conundrum of some sort. What do we do without being accused of now
impairing the nature of the National Media Commission? For now, that is what we have. And my good friend Ambassador Cabral Blair Media has been calling for the wherewithal, the resources to be able to make the National Media Commission really functioning. In this amorphous state that we have now, it is very difficult to really bat at those erring journalists. But if there were a modicum of sanctions against those who infringe on the law, I think that there will be some fear, which is not the kind of fear, you know, which was in place when the criminal libel law was still operational. I have always said that anything that will put a padlock on the mouth of a person just to gag that person does not belong to 21st century. And we should do everything to open up, but also ensure as a corollary that people respect their responsibility, know what those responsibilities are. Of course, there are several, you know, approaches to such issues, but sometimes those who are offended think that they would rather let sleeping dogs lie. What I am actually calling for is that we should be litigious. If you are hurt, if your integrity is called into question for no apparent reason, you should be able to go to the law court and seek redress. And that is exactly what should be the case, so that people will not think that all the journalists are having a field day and so on and so forth. They are doing this in tandem with the politicians who think that the journalists must be in their pockets for pittance. And that is what my other colleague who spoke was trying to talk about and worried about. And we are all worried about that kind of situation. We know journalists who say that, yes, let me be your hatchet man. Mm-hmm. Give me certain pieces of information, I string them together, and I'll damage whoever you want me to damage. That is the fact that I form.
Okay.
Even journalists, we should be developing our nation.
Okay. Dr. Nialabi, you've ended on a very bright note, developing the nation, and certainly we'll be taking it up as to how we pick the issues and push people to speak only to the issues, but that will be another forum. Thank you so much for now.
You're welcome.
Dr. Nialabi is a media consultant and has been speaking a lot as we hit close to 1 year on Behind the News, trying to raise concerns about proper media practice. But talking about the issues, sometimes quickly the Ghana Journalists Association is brought into the picture, and sometimes the concerns are that it is not able to whip its members into line. Is that really the situation? Afro Money is the Vice President of the GGA. Thank you so much for your time this evening.
Thank you, Kinsley.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Are you succeeding in reining in members to be able to do what is right so that we don't become the news instead of reporting the news?
I don't think we need any superfluity of evidence to measure the level of success the media has stocked up and continues to stock up. If we look at the magnitude we have, the diversity in the media arena, the boldness with which people speak, But democracy without a free media is impossible. That's what the effect that the Ghanaian experience amplified and clearly demonstrate the fact that democracy in this country is not only ingrained in theory, but also rooted in practice. And again, democracy without participation is no democracy at all. And the level of participation in this country gives ample meaning and substance to our democracy. We live in a country where almost everyone can articulate his views or her views, you know, ventilate her concerns or his concerns. And they also give feedback to government programs and policies, and they also are able to hold public office of public office holders to account for their stewardship. So these are all ingredients of a vibrant democracy, and the media have been at the center of it all, and the centrality of our role continues to be in full glow.
Yes.
This does not obscure the fact that we have some challenges, and after the challenges, they will be with us. And as we often said, that there's no profession in any human institution. Mm-hmm. The profession, indeed, in any human institution is an impossible goal. So we have a fair share of imperfections, but some are so monumental that on the occasion of the 10th anniversary of the repeal of the criminal and seditious license laws, we need to take a deeper introspection of what, where we come from, where we are going, and how to get there.
Okay. Other morning, looking at all the issues, sometimes in discussions, it comes up that instead of even going hard on those who are going astray, if I have to use that word, the DGA tends to provide a shelter for those going astray, rather. Is that a situation?
Not at all. Even though constitutionally, we are obliged to rally to the defense of our members who find themselves in some difficulties of some kind, those who are wrongly penalized or molested or brutalized or you know, treated unfairly in the line of duty. We've just created the impression that we should our early journalism, and this is an unfortunate perception. But within us, our hearts bleed over the level of ethical misconduct perpetrated by some of our members. Some of them, for lack of training, but some of the challenges we witness and we see every day, they are evident symptoms of the problem. The real problem to us is the lack of training. The lack of training is at the core of most of the challenges we experience in the media. And of course, many are those, or few are those, who, whether trained or not, they be so inclined as to deviate from the standards of doing or being practicing the profession. So, as I said, a new institution, and by base of four, and training and retraining, policy investment in training, I believe we'll attain the standard we all desire.
Yeah, we've spoken about the training, retraining a lot. How are you going to the various media houses, appealing to them so that at least it becomes something regular for some of these concerns to be discussed?
In fact, we do invest almost all our resources with by case of our partners come to us in training, because we know that policy generation by the ingenuity of man, what we wield and the influence we wield and the power we exercise are so strong that they can make or make this country. This readily brings to mind the genocidal spectacle in Rwanda. We also what happened. Someone went on air and made a statement against one ethnic group. And within minutes, there was human slaughter beyond imagination. And as we approach election 2012, we appeal to our people that yes, we all have inclinations when it comes to policies, affiliations when it comes to policies. But our job and professional training demand that we play it fair, accurate, balanced, show neutrality and professionalism in whatever we do.
We want to thank you very much, Afomoni, for your time on Behind the News. That's the Vice President of the Ghana Journalists Association talking to us. Certainly, more room for improvement. But still talking about training, Francis Badago is the SRC President of the Ghana Institute of Journalism. And we want to look at him briefly as to the type of training they are receiving and how he thinks it will equip them for the challenges ahead. Francis, you are welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Kingsley.
Do you think you have been adequately prepared from what you are receiving to skip some of these challenges or ride them when they come your way?
Thank you very much. To a large extent, the question gives us the opportunity to respond that to a large extent we are not given the required training due to lack of some of the facilities that are supposed to be provided. As we speak now, the only communication institution in this country that is of public virtue has no radio equipment. And this, to a large extent, should tell you that theory with practice may not merge at one point in time. As it stands now, the limited lecture halls on campus also compel authorities to always even admit just a few number of students out of thousands of applicants each year. It makes it more competitive for only competent ones to be admitted though. However, when you look at the other side of the coin, where student accommodation is virtually or totally a mirage, it's to a large extent a bad one. We believe that infrastructure development at the new site will help expand many facilities like lecture halls, accommodation facilities, practical training centers, among others. Indeed, the government of the day has promised in their manifesto, 2008 manifesto, that they will develop the new site for the Ghana Institute of Journalism when they are voted into power.
So you believe that there should be a development of infrastructure to help you properly get training. But let me ask you, you've mentioned radio equipment, for instance. Some of your people who want to go into radio go on attachments. What do they make of it?
Indeed, we do. And as I speak to you, we are currently on attachment. But as to whether all of us get places to do our attachment is another question. As it stands now, most of our students have not been able to get places just because all the media houses have been choked with a lot of people. Now, it's only this year that we've had that opportunity to have a lot of students from Ghana Institute of Journalism having the training, the practical training at some of these institutions. But over the years, it has been a problem. And I can assure you, as we continue with this particular training process, we will continue to have this problem. And these are some of the reasons why we are advocating, students of Ghana Institute of Journalism are advocating for our own radio equipment to be brought to campus for us to go ahead with the practical as attached to the theory.
Okay, certainly that will form the theme for another discussion. But for now, I want to thank you very much, Francis Badago, SRC President of the Ghana Institute of Journalism. You are on Behind the News, linking up with all our regional FM stations. And before we move on to our final story, we have tons of your text here. Let's see how we do justice to some of them. Journalists must not forget that their freedom to report does not mean freedom to attack and insult personalities. Good evening from Cape Coast. GVC, you are the best and you call to none. Keep it up. From Ali Abdul Wahab, from the Northern Region somewhere. Are radio presenters classified as journalists? If they are, then the Media Commission has a lot to do. Good evening to sending in that one. And from Salia, which one are you paying us? Is it the single spine arrears or the 30% base pay? Please, you are confusing us. I think you are asking some questions in relation to our first story. And then I will urge Professor J.E. Mills to bring his kind attention to the SSSS problem, that is single spine problems, to avoid subsequent complaints on the workers' salaries. Nalide Nelson sent that one from Kwandan. So I thought Professor said they would not like to be placed on the single spine. Why are they now calling for placement? Please, they should give us a break. Attacko from Dabla Junction. It is amazing that an act that has been described as criminal is being repealed. Why are we then crying for the way people speak? After all, to be responsible in speaking is relative. Harrison from Damongo. It is not easy implementing the single spine salary structure, and so government has really done well. Meanwhile, government should try and correct all the anomalies, especially income tax on teacher training allowance. From Kodo John Mampon. And bravo, Closer. The strike is long overdue. We support you from Bakwale Sola. The best way to address issues for government should be dialogue. Closer is on the verge of West name is Good Case from BB. I didn't see this name well, but one SHS somewhere. Why these mistakes and distortions with every phase of the SSS implementation? Is it lack of capacity or what? From Usman Navrongo. Let's move on to our next story in relation to money transfer. For some Ghanaians, having a relation abroad is a blessing because of expected dividends from them. For a period, remittance has been seen as an important injection into a developing country's economy. For the year 2010, the total remittance to Ghana constituted 7% of the gross domestic product. The remittance was twice as large as Ghana's total foreign direct investment for 2010. As much as we are looking at its importance, the Dankwa Institute is raising the red flag. What is this red flag about? Nana Atobrakweku is head of research and has joined us on the line. Nana, you are welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, my brother. And how are you?
Fine. And we are asking that question. What is the red flag about the remittances?
Thank you very much. You know, listening to what you just read, as you introduced me, you underscored the vital or importance of remittances, the role it plays in households, the role it plays in nation building. So it is an important segment of our financial structure, but then it comes at a cost. There are registered money transfer operators in Ghana today and abroad that are legitimately allowed to do such businesses. The same vein too, there are unregistered and illegal money transfer operators in the system. But then our checks have shown us that a lot of the monies that come in through remittances go through these illegal routes. And these have various serious implications. In the first place, how do you track monies that have gone through these illegal routes? Monies that were sent through a system whereby identity is not verified, there is no receipt issued, there is no way of tracking where the money came from, what activities the one who sends the money is involved in. It's difficult, but then it implies that dirty money could be channeled through this channel. I think it's important that the government or the regulatory bodies put a check on the operations of these illegal money transfer operators. Because if not, they're not only denying the country or the state of necessary government revenue, but then also they are putting the real registered money transfer operators out of business.
Yeah, we are asking that question because for many, when there is money transfer, it is coming through these agencies well established and advertising. So, what exactly is the point? Yes.
There are the Western Unions, there are the Money Grams, there are the Unity Links, there are the Sambers, and all of them. Those are the well recognized institutions. But then, between you and I, and as our survey led us to see, in Makola today, in Okaisi today, in Abosokai today, at Dakomakokompe today, in Kumasi Edun, and all those places today, you can go into a shop pretending to sell CDs or Broniwewu cloths for their front end business. But when you go behind, they are actually dealing in foreign exchange. They are actually dealing in foreign remittances. And the serious thing is that they are able to quote figures even more competitive than the Bank of Ghana interest rates and the Bank of Ghana foreign exchange rate. And you can transfer as much as 200,000 euro in a single slump. This can be done by the well-structured and recognized institutions. And how are these monies arrived at? And they can pay these monies in any currency of your choice.
Yeah.
At higher rates than the Bank of Ghana. It calls for interest. It calls for questioning how these things work. We are thinking that if either the government puts an end or try to check the operations of these entities or bring them all on board and formalizes their operations. Otherwise, the state is losing revenue and then also we risk exposing ourselves to the activities of money laundering. Mm-hmm. Let me ask this question. The person in the UK who wants to send money to a relative and is bent on sending money through this illegal route, knowing all the implications and all the risk involved, why would you want to go ahead to do that if you don't have any line of knowing that if you don't have inclination towards crime.
Okay.
If so, you don't want to do what is right,
Nana, brother. You are raising an important point. This is a black market, and for what you are saying, from what you are saying, it has been raised to another level altogether. So,
yeah.
How do you think the appropriate authorities can get in readily, if even they want to streamline? Because you know how the Forest Bureau came about at that time.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. We think that the regulatory body, from the Bank of Ghana, the SFO, or the EOCO, for instance, can coordinate amongst themselves. If either way, regularize the operations of these illegal operators, or we open our eyes wide and make sure we flush them out because we know where they are. We pretend we don't know, but then we know where they are. In our place where we stand at that point, we don't think people should be out of their jobs. We can do more than that. Now, how do we do that? It's like when we say we should legalize prostitution, it is because we want to track the activities of prostitutes and give them education when it is due. The same vein, we can also realize the activities of these operators by bringing them on board. The regime is very strict. It makes it so difficult for some of these ones who don't have huge capitals to go into these businesses. So maybe it can be reduced, maybe it can be relaxed. But then you capture them, you take their revenue, and you monitor the activities so that monies cannot be laundered through these routes.
Okay. I want to thank you very much, but we'll still be exploring the legal environment and how we can make it possible for some of these ones to be streamlined for everyone to benefit and for the country to benefit in the long run. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, brother.
Nanata Brakweku is the head of research at the Dankwa Institute of Media Research and Policy Analysis Center. Behind the news, before we go, some of your tests. The NNC must back up and make sure journalists report what they see and not what somebody says. From Mor John, Upper East Region, the enactment of a broadcasting law on its own would not bring sanity on our media airwaves. Hosts of radio programs and journalists must be more professional in their work. Baba Musa UDS. And God bless Lawyer Sekwedu. Every journalist must be disciplined. From Mr. Amada. And government should sack Iva Ado. I don't know who that person is. Exactly. At the Fair Wages and Salaries Commission. Media workers from Ghana Metro Agency will be next to go on strike. From Ken Ho. The single spine is creating problems in Ghana. From Rubin Tegbuza Adaku. And if he's using cash and paste for the single spine, the value is still the same. Things in that one. And Mr. Isaac Tre and Auntie Salome Okuforia, thank you for your message of encouragement and acknowledging that this is one of a difference on Radio Ghana. This is where we wrap it all up for today. I want to thank my production team of Christopher Sieru, Bright Agama, Edmund Tete, and Barbara did the summaries for us. We had Nadia Gleago as our production assistant and the rest of our technical team. My name is Kingsley Obintre.